Halo, halo, Sacred Icon listeners. We used to do ads for other people, but I decided, why don't we do one for ourselves? Whether you're here listening to us for the first time or you've heard every episode, I'd like to briefly tell you what we're about and how you can support us. We have been doing this podcast since 2019, and with that has come lots of changes. We started as a primarily Halo-only show, but have evolved, combat evolved, over the years to talk about a wide variety of things in the realm of nerd culture. As you can imagine, we've made numerous changes to our platforms, usernames, and emails over the years, so now is the time for me to set things right and give the Covenant back their bomb. You can join our Discord by clicking the link included on our podcast feed. You can also send us an email or a voice message at sacrediconpodcast@gmail.com. We have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/sacredicon, and we no longer use Twitter or X or whatever else the kids are calling it these days. So if you see someone who looks like us there, just know it's not us. Lastly, you can support us on patreon.com/sacredicon and receive a bevy of bonus content. We're so glad you chose us to be the voice in your ear on this particular day and hope you enjoy the episode ahead. Previously on Sacred Icon, we boarded the hype train towards Baldur's Gate 3 and Starfield's release, and now we are here. I am with my mate, who's playing Baldur's Gate, and it's your shield of Rosaria from Final Fantasy 16 here to talk about Starfield. Yeah, that's right. I'm not Joshua Hargis, but I'm trying my best. Here we are today to talk about our impressions of these new games we love. We can't give a review yet because we're not that far in them. We haven't beat them, but we want to give our impressions, talk about some of the discourse, some of the drama. We're excited. I'm here today with Josh. Josh, how are you feeling today, buddy?
I'm just peppy, buddy. I thought that was great. I like the my mate playing Baldur's Gate.
I just did some rhyming. I told Josh beforehand, I'm like, hey, let me try the intro this time, and I'll try to pull a Josh here. And I'm like, how can I be kind of like hip, corny, kind of rhyme around, and that's what I came up with, so.
Don't be me, be better.
And you were great. No.
We'll roll with it for now. But what are we talking about today exactly, Josh? Like, are we going to go over the reviews first for Starfield, and then kind of just go through our impressions? How many hours of Starfield would you say you've played?
Probably three or four. Brian is going to predominantly, you know, dominate the conversation for Starfield because he's put a lot more time that's closer to most of you guys having played that, whereas I'll have a lot more to say for Baldur's Gate 3. But it is pretty exciting. Both games are finally fully out as of this recording, available for everybody. That's an exciting time, man. We're eating good as gamers.
We are, dude. I think this is the best year in gaming. I really
do. Dude, if it's not, it's at least a great great opponent for 2007, man. But I'm with you. I can see that being the case. But to kick things off, Brian, I wanted to give you the soapbox to step up on. I'm sliding up the soapbox there.
Give me revved up.
I'm shining your boots, buddy.
Yeah.
So Brian posted in the Discord. He was the first one to peep the early reviews for Starfield when they were hitting. And now, overall, on PC, it scored on Metacritic an 87, with it getting an 86 on the Series X. However, the biggest talking point was IGN and GameSpot both giving it a 7. And that has sparked a lot of controversy in this past week, while the game has been out in early access leading up till now. And it's just pretty interesting because while I think most people playing the game are enjoying it, it seems to be that the biggest controversy, the biggest talking point in a lot of ways, have been that review score between both of them. So what do you think about that, man? It's a pretty crazy, crazy take that people are having.
There's so many different directions to take this. But I'll say, to give you guys where I'm at this current point in time on this recording, I've played almost 25 hours of Starfield. And
nice, dude.
If you ask me to give it a score based on 25 hours, which would be stupid because that's basically nothing, I'm at like a 9. I'm like a 9 out of 10. Like, I think this game's incredible.
I'm fucking 10.
I love this game. So as you hear me talk about the negatives of Starfield, as you hear me talk about the reviews that came out, know that in the background you have somebody who's very hyped about Starfield, who really loves the game, thinks it's deserving of a 9 out of 10.
That's a good preface, because I think most of you and I, conversations usually stem around, we really like something, but we want to analyze it from every angle. So we sometimes dominate.
It comes off like we don't like it or something, but like, I'm full on Starfield hype mode. I think this game's really good. Like, if you ask me personally, do I feel like I see how this game lands at a 7. Well, I do see how it lands at a 7 for some, and that's what I'm going to get into. But like me, yeah, like it's, there's no way it's a 7, right? Like I love this game already, and I have so much more to play. But yeah, it's interesting. The discourse has been around the 7 out of 10 score so much. And the thing is, most of the scores are in the 9 or higher range. That's how it has an 87, 86 Metacritic. Mm-hmm. You got some in the 8 area, but it's mostly 7's pretty much the lowest. I think I saw a couple 6's, but I don't even know if they were like credible enough to be counted by Metacritic. So 7 might actually be the lowest. But yeah, there's a couple different angles to take with this here. Like, I think if you're a big Bethesda fan and you were hoping for Bethesda delivering another experience like you're used to, but in space, and that was your expectation, I think it delivered, right? Like, I think it's if you're a Bethesda fan wanting more Bethesda, like, I just don't know how you could be too disappointed. But then I also have another angle where I'm like, I can see how you're disappointed there too. But like, this is what you expect from Bethesda. A little bit of jank, a little bit of corniness, facial animations, while better than ever, can look kind of silly. I don't know, like lots of different factions, lots of different places to go. It's everything you'd expect from Bethesda. But, and I have two angles to take this, so for the criticism. So like, to help explain to myself and to others the 7 out of 10s and stuff like that. There's two angles. You can take one angle, which is somebody who's looking at this as a new IP, who wants a great AAA experience, but doesn't necessarily have a lot of Bethesda background, or doesn't necessarily consider themselves a huge Bethesda fan. You get that? That's one angle. So just like, new IP for a non-Bethesda fan, or someone's not a huge Bethesda fan. Then you have, on the other hand, big Bethesda fan who was expecting this to be exactly like their prior efforts, and it's not. So that's the two angles. So the first thing I want to attack is
big Bethesda fan.
Yeah.
Big babushka.
Big Bethesda fan. It makes me seem like I have some big whole ass cheeks, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, if you're somebody who's just like, oh, I want to play, I got Xbox, I got Game Pass, I got this new IP out, it's this AAA game called Starfield. They've either never played Fallout or Skyrim, or they've dabbled in Fallout and Skyrim. Mm. And they're just not really like, they're not following Bethesda. They might not even know that Bethesda makes these games. They're just kind of people to just want to play a new IP. Mm-hmm. I think it's very reasonable to play this game and to go, well, these facial animations don't look as good as, you know, Last of Us or God of War, or like they look really old. Some of the first person shooting mechanics, while I think pretty enjoyable, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel like Destiny or Doom or Halo in its quality of like tightness and how much fun that is. Mm-hmm. You look at like, you know, it's zooming in on characters' faces, which I know we love. You look 100%. At just the way Bethesda makes their games. If you're coming into this as a new IP, it's got a really slow start. It's got lots of loading screens. It's got really confusing menus. Lots of systems that are working, you know, buy a ship, upgrade a ship, build a base, build different pharmaceuticals. Like you can build, like, you know, make drugs or build health packs or whatever. Work can on you your
establish
weapons.
Like a Walgreens on a moon.
Maybe you could just name the planet Walgreens.
It'd be a lot cooler if you could. Yeah.
But like, there's so many systems and there's not enough tutorials and it's a slow start and there's loading screens constantly and the game is like, I don't know if I can think of a single game that's more fixated on fast traveling than this one, which is so silly, which is kind of crazy because I've heard my brother for years, you know, in the past we played Bethesda games, Creighton would be like, oh, I'm not going to use fast travel at all my first playthrough. I'm going to walk to every town. I'm going to walk to every city.
Yeah, I get you that. Know,
I'll take the horse and buggy that I can pay to walk to drive there. I'll take a horse, but I'm not going to fast travel. Sure. You have to fast travel in Starfield. Starfield's space exploration doesn't really exist in the way you'd picture it. It's just fast travel with like a menu sheen that kind of like you're in a ship and you're controlling it. And you can have dogfights, but it kind of acts as like a really spectacular menu to where you're going to fast travel. You can't really fly to planets. and orbit them and land them. Like, even if you're at the planet right above it, you still can't land on the planet without pausing the game and going into your map
right.
and then fast traveling to the surface. So it's like between the loading screens and the fast travel and the weird facial animations and the Bethesda clunkiness, if you're somebody who's coming into this as a new IP and you're not really like all about just following Bethesda with that slow start and just all the complaints I've made, does it really seem that shocking that this game's lowest scores are like a 7? Because a 7 is still good on the scale. Now, I know there's a lot of conversation around how people actually view 7s. And I think, I don't know if it was somebody on Twitter, because I'm not on Twitter, but I saw it like tagged somewhere. It might have been Paul Tassi maybe, but said like, let's be honest here. A lot of people in the States, at least, view scores on a grade school basis. Or a 70 is like a C-, you barely pass the class, almost a D-plus or something. That's how they view it, even though like IGN's own scale says 7 equals good. 8's like great, 9's amazing, 10's like masterpiece, whatever. So I think if you're coming into this as like a new IP and you don't have all these like Bethesda prior experiences, I think it's very easy to picture a 7. It's so slow to start off, it's so confusing, there's not much tutorials. Items all over the place, and then, you know, if you just played the main story and quit, which you might be, you know, people would be like, oh, Brian, that's not how you play Bethesda games. Like you never just play the main story and quit. You do all the factions, you do all the side quests, you go off the beaten path and stuff like that. But once again, if it's like a Game Pass, new IP accessible thing, it's like people might just beat the main story and call it, you know what I mean? So I think there's that angle. There's the new kind of IP angle, which is funny that I don't know how much that actually holds water for critical reviewers, because I'm pretty sure pretty much everyone who reviewed this game and got early access, usually they're Bethesda fans, right? Usually the outlet chooses someone who likes Bethesda games to review it. So it does seem kind of weird that someone like... I know IGN's reviewer, the one that everyone talks about the most, is Dan Stapleton. And he likes Bethesda games. He gave Fallout like a 9.5 or something, Fallout 4. So that doesn't really apply to him. So then you have the other angle, which is the Bethesda fan that... that gets kind of groovy with it. Is coming into this game expecting to get what they got out of prior Bethesdas. And a lot of it's not there. There is no step-out moment in this game where you walk out, like you walk out of Vault... Yeah, you walk out of the vault.
Is there?
No, there's not, dude. It just doesn't happen.
Wow.
You know, Skyrim. Wow. It's like you get past the Alduin opening, you walk out, and there's like you see the mountains. You see like, oh, here's Bleak Sparrow. Is it Bleak Sparrow or something like that?
Bleak Falls Barrow. Yeah.
There's like Riverwood down the path. Like, whoa, you know, holy crap. Or you come out in Oblivion, I come out of the sewers, and you're like, whoa, I can go anywhere. You come out of the vault in Fallout 3. You know, even Fallout 4, which is a game that I think is probably Bethesda's most heavily criticized, you do have a step-out moment there, too. You go underground because the nukes are coming off, and then you come back out, and the world's changed. But in Starfield, it just kind of plays it straight. There is no walkout moment, and then it's like a really, really slow start, and you're kind of like, you know, you're mining, and then you get on your ship, and then there's like pirates you got to fight, and it kind of just... It doesn't grab you in the beginning. And then even as you start to play for a few hours, and I don't know what kind of opinion Josh can add to this, because I would say I would say the game didn't really get that much fun till further than the amount of time that you've played. So I think you have good impressions. Obviously we're gonna get over here in a minute and you'll tell me, but
no,
like,
I do though.
I feel like it might be closer to 10 hours where the game really starts to feel like you start to get the groove of like, oh, okay, I kind of get this. Like, yeah, there's lots of loading and fast traveling, but
plot spoilers, because we don't want to do that for you guys listening. But why do people say? Why am I seeing so many people say that? What is it that makes it feel like suddenly there's like an opening up moment in terms of just the quality increase?
Well, I think, and this is I was kind of going to go right into this anyways. You know, for someone like Dan Stapleton of IGN, giving it the 7. And he's used to playing prior Bethesda games. What's the one thing we've all said? I think you, me, and Creighton have probably said it on this very podcast. When you get a Bethesda game, a lot of times, what do you do? The second you get freedom, which is usually very early, you just kind of run off in a direction.
Right.
And you see what shit happens. You know, you're like, maybe I went to Bleak Falls Borough. Maybe Creighton ran all the way to
Solitude.
Solitude, and you went to White Run, and maybe you encountered a dragon at 3 hours in, and I encountered a dragon at 25 hours in. It's like, oh, right. Dude, you hadn't started the main quest yet? Holy shit. And there's all these different things you can do and things you can stumble across, and that's what a Bethesda game feels like. It feels like you can go anywhere and have rich content. Mm-hmm. That's not Starfield. That's not Starfield at all. It's got a linear opening with no step-out moment, and then you get in space, and this is where it starts to hit you that you're in space and there is no real space travel. It's using a map and fast traveling and loading to these places. And then you get on your first planet and you think to yourself, I want to do what I do in other Bethesda games. I'm going to run off into the sunset. You know, I'm going to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most of the time, any planet you land on, you do that, you realize there's nothing there. Like, there's really nothing there. The planets are barren. Or they'll have like an outpost with some pirates you shoot, or like some random like alien creatures you can shoot. But like in most instances, if I land on a planet and I just run around, I'm not going to run into anything that's special.
Sure.
And that's got to be like a gut punch to so many like big Bethesda fans, because that's never happened before in Elder Scrolls, Fallout. You've never just ran in one direction and just seen endless fields of nothing. With no NPCs, no, you know what I'm saying? You look like you want to say something, Josh.
Yeah, is it similar to Mass Effect in the sense that the hub areas are where they offload the side quests that kind of take you beyond?
Yeah, and it's definitely the Uncharted Worlds feeling of Mass Effect 1.
Okay.
Where, like, you go, and that's the thing, is, like,
that's what
they
I've
have,
heard.
Like, they have worlds that are built for quests and stuff with, like, cities and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you try to venture on beyond, if you venture beyond, I mean, I haven't, you gotta understand, guys, I've only played, like, 25 hours. If you try to venture beyond even some of those planets that have the big cities, when you venture out, a lot of times you're still kind of going out into nothingness. You know, there's not... Because
okay.
What they've kind of done is where, like, this is how I picture it. If you look at Skyrim or Fallout, you have, like, a flat map, and they pack that map full of content, and you just go wherever.
So dense.
But it feels like for Starfield, they're like, well, since you're going to have this whole galaxy with 1,000 planets, they took... probably even more content that is in all of Skyrim, but they took it and they pieced it out, and then they placed it in planets all over the place. So then what you end up having is you have a game that's got, it's more content rich than maybe even Bethesda's best work, but it's spread out across planets, and the planets are so large, it kind of just, like, it feels like it's there to be, it almost feels like you arrive there to do the thing and then you leave. You know, mm-hmm. Where that's never really been how it is. Also, like, when you play, like, Skyrim, you can be like, oh, I'm making my way to do the main quest. And then you get, oh, Dark Brotherhood quest. You start doing that.
Right.
And then you get sidetracked by companions. And then you get sidetracked by Thieves Guild. And then before you know it, you're 78 hours in. You're still at the beginning of the main quest. I'm not saying that can't happen, because it definitely can happen in Starfield. I mean, I'm kind of doing something similar right now in my playthrough. But it feels less likely for you to want to do that, because it's so split up. It's so segregated. It's like, I mean, it's constant loading and split screens. Or mm-hmm. When I say split screens, loading screens and fast travel. It's constant.
Gotcha.
Because
I gotcha.
I mean, you leave the if you want to leave the planet, fast travel. If you want to go from somewhere on the planet to somewhere else on the planet, fast travel. If you want to go back out to space, fast travel. You go land in another orbit of another planet, fast travel. So it's just, I think I've kind of tried to give, like, the two different perspectives here of a disappointed Starfield person. Like I said, you have the person where it's a new IP, not a lot of Bethesda experience. Then you have, like, your Dan Stapleton of IGN, where he has a lot of Bethesda experience, but he has these expectations for what the game should be. And right. I know somebody might be saying, well, Brian, you know, expectations, you know, that's kind of his fault. Yes, when it comes to hype, but I don't think it's his fault. And I'm not even trying to, like, single out Dan Stapleton. It's just the one everyone talks about is that 7.
Yeah, he's gotten very harassed on Twitter. It's
yeah,
very,
like, I feel like bad. It's for you.
I feel bad too. He's just doing his job, even if you don't like the score.
Absolutely. And I'm sure nobody complained about his 9. I mean, people probably complained, but, like, overall, by comparison, people didn't complain about that 9.5.
Was it Ryan McCaffrey that gave Alien Isolation the 4?
Yeah, I actually screwed it up, Josh. I think it's a 5.9, but still.
Okay. But either way.
I thought it was a 4, but I think I heard it was actually 5.9.
We revert to that insane. A lot in conversation between us. But, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's ballsy. At least they have the balls to do that, even though that seems completely untrue. but
continue. Yeah, but I think I really understand where people like Dan or whoever reviewed it
with
GameSpot. I think, I feel like I got some of my voice going on today.
You're fine, dude. You're fine.
It might be that West Virginia twang.
I'm the guy that's like, I go to the drive-thru and I'm like, let me get a burger.
And they're like, just speak up, you fat. But no, I really understand where he's coming from, because if you look at a Bethesda fan prior, you get in this game and it's got a really slow opening, kind of linear. No wow moment where you step out and you look at the world and you're suddenly bombarded with menus and loading screens and fast traveling and disjointedness in a way you've never felt in Bethesda game before. And especially if you're trying to this is your first impressions, right? Like, first impressions count for a lot when it comes to anything. And I think we're starting to see this conversation around the industry right now with podcasts and videos. People are starting to say, I kind of reviewed this at like 40 hours, but now I'm like 80 hours and this feels like a different game. Like, holy shit, you know, it just keeps going and going and going. And I think, you know, we've talked about in the past, we've talked about how Bethesda's designing this game because they've seen the success of Skyrim and they've designed this game to be a game that can be played for 10, 20 years or even longer. Right. And I think we're starting to see that now as people get further in the game. This game is so back heavy with all the content that's there. And I don't know, it's interesting that I feel like the game doesn't have a strong start. I think it's probably the weakest start in a Bethesda game. And it's so slow and there's all these menus. But then it's also like, despite there being all these systems and menus, there's not that many tutorials either. Like, you don't even know that things exist in the game. Like, I've been listening to people say,
that's what I've heard as well, that this is the least hand-holding Bethesda title.
Yeah, and it's really complicated. If you try to jump into like shipbuilding, you're gonna be like, what the hell? Or like, you don't even know things exist. Like, you can lean out of cover. You can take cover and then lean with your gun around the corners. Like,
I didn't know that. But
yeah, some people,
I played for 3 or 4 hours, so
yeah, but I mean, like, they don't tell you. It never tells you that. True. So like, there's things like that you just that aren't explained to you. When you try to, this is so great that I've heard other people say the same thing, because I thought, man, I feel like an idiot. I know I saw from the back at E3 when they showed off, you could hail or board a ship. I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. So I'm in space and I'm flying towards the ship and I'm thinking that the hail / board option is going to come up when I hover over the ship, and it just keeps not coming up. And I eventually just slowly fly right into the other ship and bounce off it like bumper cars. And then I'm like, what am I missing? So then I try to line my ship up so that like the bottom of my ship is like lined up with the top of their ship. So like maybe I can connect, and I can't figure it out. And it's not that complicated. All you have to do, you have to press your scanner on, turn your scanner on, and then press A over the ship, and then it'll come up with board.
But they didn't
tell me that. So there's all these complicated systems, all these complicated, convoluted menus, loading screens.
That's good to know ahead of time.
Yeah. And then there's no tutorials for it all. Mm-hmm. And it just feels so different from what you'd expect from a prior Bethesda experience. I mean, and even stuff like, I remember, I know Josh, you were actually the first person to say it, but I thought it immediately too, was there's no way to switch your gun. Like, in a normal, like, press Y to switch your secondary weapon. You only thing you can do is set a gun to a D-pad option, hotkey, which is fine, but like, it just feels kind of like, I just kind of expected, like, at least like a Halo or any game, Battlefield, Call of Duty, press a button, switch to the other weapon real quick. But it sucks too if you get like a new weapon that you want to use and you haven't hotkeyed it yet and you're in the middle of battle and you run out of ammo in the weapon you're in and you haven't hotkeyed it, then you got to pause. Then you got to go into your inventory, then you got to select it. And it's like, it's so cumbersome. And I feel like anybody who's reviewed this game and spent 70 hours playing it, at least 10 of those hours, if not 20, were spent in menus, loading screens, fast traveling. Mm. So I feel like the critiques for this game are very real for both your new to Bethesda people and your Bethesda fans of old. I really think it's fair. Now that I've gotten that out of the way, and I've pretty much alongside making those kind of like stances, I've pretty much told you what I think's wrong with the game. I mean, it's everything I've just said. It's the menus, it's the constant loading, it's the disjointedness of the experience. I think that I immediately, when I first started playing, I was saddened by what space travel was, because now I've looked over the footage. I don't think Bethesda ever lied to us, but like, here's what we knew going into this game. We knew you couldn't do the No Man's Sky thing where you just kind of like leave the planet and go directly through orbit into space. We knew that because I remember we talked about it in the Discord and stuff. People would be like, I'd be like, man, I kind of wish we could do that. And Wesley and people would be like, I don't even care about that kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, that's fine, whatever. But I feel like there was a general assumption that when we went through our load screen and we got to space, we'd be able to do something when we were in space. I think we
for sure
assumed that.
I feel like through the corpo speak, they make it sound like that was the case.
Yeah.
But there was some, you know, Todd Howard's sweet little lies in there.
Yeah, right.
Peppered in, unfortunately. A little bait and switch. Not by intention, though, but, you know, when go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I really
no,
cut.
No, you're fine.
Really
I was just going to say, when you show a little bit of footage, or when you show a lot of footage, and then you put in some speak here and there, people's minds are going to fill in the blank. So I'm sure there's a little bit of truth to them baiting and switching, but also a lot of truth to people just building that game up in their minds of what you could do versus what you can actually do.
I think it's really hard to not build it up in your mind because they show you like loading screen into space. They show you controlling your chip. Controlling
your Lay's potato chip in space.
Yeah,
don't worry, even though...
Somebody could probably craft a ship that looked like a Lay's potato chip. That would be pretty cool. They show you controlling your ship in space, moving it. They show you that you can move over your power to your thrusters, your lasers. They show you dogfighting. They show you boarding. They show you hailing. They show the planet in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why you wouldn't paint a picture in your head that this actually allows for space exploration. So, but you get in the game and you realize what it really is when you travel to the orbit outside of a planet, your ship is kind of just statically outside the orbit of the planet. And you can do dogfighting if there's ships there. You can hail ships if they're there, board ships if they're there. But it's almost like a glorified loading screen. And I don't want to make this comparison, but I'm going to because I literally can't think of anything else. Fable 3. In Fable 3, when you pause the game, it goes into a gameplay area. It's like your little, it's like almost like a house. You have a butler and several rooms. So when you pause the game, like you literally press the pause button.
Remember you telling me this way back.
Yeah. You don't go to it, like the menu doesn't pop up and the game freeze. That doesn't happen. No. When you press the pause button in Fable 3, your character goes to a house with a butler and several rooms. In one of your rooms, you have your apparel. Another room, you have your trinkets. Another room, you have your weapons. There's like a map table in the center. So it kind of, like, it feels way better than Fable 3. Like, I don't want to say, like, I don't want to bring Starfield down to that level, but I'm also like, it almost does act as, like, your pause menu because it's like, oh, let me go to orbit so that I can then fast travel to another orbit or another planet, or I can land on the planet that I am in orbit of, or I can do a dogfighting battle. But all of it kind of happens on this single screen. So I think that was one disappointment, the exploration there. Another thing... the planets. I think that's been a disappointment right off the rip for people. And I've already spoke on that a little bit too. So many of the planets are barren, right? I know Todd Howard and such, he talked about how there's going to be plenty of planets where there's just nothing there. And that's by design because that's what real space is like. And they want you to just kind of, you know, land on planets and like expect there'll be nothing, but sometimes find something and that'll be unique. But it really seems like more often than not, if it's not a design thing for a quest, these planets are going to be barren and there's going to be mostly nothing to do. Or there'll always be a cave or some pirates to fight. But the thing is, once you've gone in your 7th cave or your 18th random pirate fight, it just becomes like, oh, the auto generator has said every so Here's many planets gets a pirate fight. Every so many planets gets a cavern. So, I mean, once again, and you guys are probably thinking, whoa, 20-some minutes in, Brian, this just sounds so negative. I'm so hyped on this game, guys. But you can really see here, especially for people who have only put 25, 30, 40, 50 hours in when they make their review, which I think is just, I think you're doing a disservice to yourself as like a credible reviewer, somebody who's a professional by reviewing it that early because it's clear that that was not enough to review this game. But if you're only 25 to 50 hours in, you're looking at the menus, you're looking at the slow start, the no step out moment, the disjointedness, the fast travel, space exploration is not what you thought it'd be. Traveling around planets is not what you thought it'd be. This is kind of a joke to me, but technically, if you walk far enough in one direction on a planet, you will be hit with a screen that says return to your ship. But it takes literally like 15 real life minutes of walking in one direction to hit that wall. So you're never really going to, that's never going to happen to you naturally unless you just say to yourself, I want to see if I can walk around the whole planet.
Oh, I did see people getting mad about that. And I thought, well, what do you really want to just do that? Do you want?
Yeah,
I'm upset because I thought I was going to be able to. It's the principle. Come on, man. Well,
and that's the thing. This is where I'm about to segue into all the positives and why I love this game. But like, yeah, you can. You know, somebody asked Pete Hines before the game came out, like, can I walk around the whole planet? And he was like, yeah.
Hmm.
It was technically not a lie because you can, but it, you know, he probably knew what they were asking. Can I literally walk in one line and end up back where I started?
Right.
You can't do that. So there's a lot of little quality of life issues with the game, some Bethesda expectations that aren't there, and then some expectations for this particular title that just aren't there when you start this game up. So I think what happens is here, you're 20 hours into the game, and it just feels like a disappointment to so many, you know, especially these reviewers who weren't able to hear impressions from other reviewers as much. They didn't know what scores were going to be out there. They're just kind of trying to judge this on their own merits. That's one thing I said in the Discord too, Josh, is I feel like a lot of people don't understand that, like, when Dan Stapleton gave it a 7 or Ryan McCaffrey gave... losing my voice here. Ryan McCaffrey gave Alien Isolation a 5.9, or Ryan McCaffrey gave Halo 4 a 9.8. People don't realize that Ryan McCaffrey, Dan Stapleton, these people, they don't know what the other 100 viewers are going to give the score. The embargo drops at the same time. So it's just like you and me, Josh. Like, let's say you and me both got Starfield, and we're going to drop our embargo at the same time. We're not telling each other what the score is going to be.
Right.
I don't want to be the guy who gave Starfield a 10 when Josh and the other 100 reviewers are all down at the 6 range. Because then my credibility is going to look odd, right? It's going to look like, what? Brian, why do you think this was a 10? You know? So, like, I feel for someone like Dan Stapleton who's probably thinking, you know, there's going to be a lot of people who see these real issues and they're going to, this is not a, you know, and there's going to be a lot of people who are like, oh, it's a Bethesda title. It's hyped. We got to give it at least a 9.
Well, it's a good perspective on him probably just reviewing it to the best of his ability and not having any intentions of trying to trigger anybody, you know.
And I've heard from multiple people from IGN. I've heard from Greg Miller. I've heard from Colin Moriarty, Ryan McCaffrey. IGN doesn't do this thing where they're like, they slide a check across the table and they're like, we're getting a lot of money for this review. Make sure it's good. That's really not how it works. They have
Sounds like someone who gets a check slid across the table. Sounds like something they would say.
Yeah, they're paying me. They're paying me to cover for them.
No, no.
But, okay, but yes, right. So let me just get to the... So that's kind of it for the reviews, right? I mean, I think the TLDR at the end of the day for the reviews are... I know many people in our community say, oh, screw them, I hate reviewers, or I hate the, you know, I don't trust them or whatever. And I know Josh even can kind of relate to you guys more than me probably because he's not a big fan of like Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like that.
I love it. I just don't think, you know, I don't ever recommend people take that stuff as like truth, you know?
Yes. And I mean, I honestly,
like, usually look at that for fun in the discourse it creates, but
yeah,
you know, use your own judgment. That's all.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think really I agree with Josh because like for me, I do love looking at the scores. I love talking about them. I love the discourse.
Right.
And for me, it's like, I love to see what the overall perspective is, right? Like, what is the picture that's being painted here with broad strokes?
Yeah.
Are all these reviews coming in and they're saying that Starfield's one of the best games I've ever played? Are they saying this is the most disappointing title of the future or somewhere in between? And then I get to kind of weigh in with my thoughts to it. So it's never to say, oh, Brian looks at, you know, scores to decide what he thinks of the game. No, it's for me to just, I love the perspectives. I love seeing it. You know, it's just like me and Josh talk about all the time, like, you know, somebody says like, oh, you know, I thought the Amazing Spider-Man back on the 360 was a lot better than Insomniac Spider-Man, you know. me and Josh are Yeah. Me and Josh are thinking
surely
like,
you're not only a clown, but an entire circus.
you're not proving my point at all right now, Josh. But like what we typically do, not what Josh just did, is we typically think to ourselves, how in the world could you like the Amazing Spider-Man from the 360 better than the Insomniac one? But then what do we say to that person? We go, oh, really? That's okay. That's different. What was it? Like, what? Not that you have to explain yourself, but like, what was it about the Amazing Spider-Man?
Yeah.
And then you never know what someone's going to say. Sometimes it makes a lot of sense. Sometimes someone will tell me like, oh, well, Amazing Spider-Man is like the last gift my grandma gave me before she passed away. And it means a lot to me. And I have all these feelings. And then you go, oh, well, I'm a dick. I totally see why it's better than it does. We're not getting into objective subjective right now. We're getting into feelings and nostalgia. Like I get it.
For sure. You know, whenever someone says something like that, I do genuinely just get curious. I want to know like, yeah, that sounds out of pocket. So like, can you just tell me why? I'm not judging. I just want to know why. Like, I got to get in your head.
Curiosity.
And I got to just understand from your perspective what is so great about this. Because I also just love, I'm going to picture it in my mind as you talk about it. So please go on. You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, for me, like personally, on a personal level, this game's way better than a 7. But that doesn't mean I think that the 7, as Josh said, is out, I don't think it's out of pocket to say 7. I don't think it's wrong. It makes sense to me how you could arrive at that score. But anyways, going into the positive. So I'm gonna piggyback right off of two of the last negative things I talked about. The space exploration and the planet exploration. I think what Bethesda did was make a very, very hard decision and say to themselves, what is going to be fun for our players above all else? Is it going to be more fun to have them spend anywhere from 3 minutes to 45 minutes flying straight through a continuous galaxy to their next quest or their next location? Or is it going to be more fun to have them walking around the entire planet for hours to get to the other side? Or are we going to cultivate these experiences so that we can give the illusion of space exploration and a galaxy-wide travel without the negatives of all this bland, open nonsense space, right? Like,
right.
I think so much of No Man's Sky, like, that's a game that is loved today because of all the updates, but like so much of No Man's Sky is like, you want to go out there into this open world of nothingness and go forever. It's kind of like Minecraft, right? Like Minecraft was like, I'm just going to dig or build into the sky and just see what I can discover. But like Bethesda at the end of the day still wanted to craft a really good RPG with great writing and characters and moments. And I think they're trying to weigh like, how are we going to create this great narrative and story and writing and quests?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to balance that with 1,000 planets? Or even somebody said we don't need 1,000 planets. We didn't need that many, Brian. Okay, how are they going to balance that with 100 planets? That's still way different than just one Skyrim landscape, one Fallout landscape. So I think at the end of the day, and I'm seeing this more and more as I play, the disjointedness of you can't actually fly your ship around and landing on planets and walking 10 minutes in one direction doesn't yield anything interesting.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was the right decision. I feel like it was the right decision because I feel like as soon as you introduce the actual flying forever or actually walking around the planet forever, they can't create enough cult like actual content, like crafted content to fill infinite amount of space. We're talking about a game that's dev time would have been 15, 20 years.
That's another good point.
So
I agree with that.
They're kind of caught with their pants down on that one because like it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Mm-hmm. And you look at something comparable like Mass Effect. I'm going to go with Mass Effect 1/2, for example. Mass Effect 1, you had like, okay, here's your planets, but you land and it's like straight up levels pretty much, right? Like you land, it's a Mass Effect level. Then you have like Uncharted Worlds, which we've heard Josh talk about a lot, and I agree with him. I mean, I love the Uncharted Worlds, but they kind of objectively suck because there's like nothing there. It's just a planet of nothingness with nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to Mass Effect 2 where they kind of changed it up. They took the criticism to heart and they're like, okay, now we have bland planets, but you kind of just scan for minerals, right? You don't actually land
right.
them. And then every other planet is like a specific level. So you kind of find Bethesda taking this like nice middle ground where they're like, how can we give people the Bethesda experience on a galaxy-wide scale, but not go the No Man's Sky route where people are just playing for 6 hours without any crafted content, and it's just boring as hell. Like, people are complaining now that they run 5-10 minutes in on a random planet and there's nothing to do. Imagine if Bethesda didn't limit any of this stuff, how often we'd be caught in that boring. Because to another thing I'll paint for you guys, like, I mean, most of you listening probably are playing the game, but like, it's kind of interesting how Bethesda like made this universe, right? Because like you get to a solar system and there'll be a planet. And when you click on the planet, it's like, yo, here is 3 landing spots. And each landing spot has something crafted or worth looking at. And then there's all this space on the planet, not where you land, that you can travel and explore. But those spots specifically are the crafted content. So there's this this way in which all across the galaxy, there's plenty of opportunity for exploration. But they've also made the map kind of cultivate, you know, crafted content. So I think it's genius the way they've done it. I think they treaded a very fine line. They were obviously going to get criticism either way what they did, but I'm really liking it. It's making the game really enjoyable to me. Another huge criticism I didn't mention way back at the beginning of this podcast, the maps. Oh, doggy, are the maps dog shit. They're horrible. Mainly just the local maps. And I think that has to do probably with like the amount of planets and the procedural generation that they didn't put the crafted effort in. Because like in Skyrim, it's like you know everything that's going to be there exactly as it is.
Sure.
Make the maps. So I think that's why they did that. But like not only are the local maps really, really poor, but I'm constantly not knowing where to sell stuff, where to buy stuff, where to find like an inn to rest at, because none of that is told to me. It's just like, here's this huge open, because the cities are huge too. Like besides the planet themselves, the cities are huge. It's like, just wander around and hope you find it. And it can get kind of frustrating. So there's like,
have you gotten to Nova yet? Is it Nova?
I don't think so. No, I'm only New Atlantis and Neon.
Neon. Oh, that's the one I was thinking of.
Neon. Yeah, I've been to Neon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dude, Neon's pretty cool? Amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, dude, it just feels like I'm literally playing Cyberpunk. I'm not trying to be that guy, cool. But like, it just feels awesome. Straight up like Cyberpunk.
That's what I wanted to hear.
But, man, where was I going with that, Josh? Maps.
I apologize. Yeah. Just no, talking okay. about how small they are. There's not really much to them. And then even in the local areas, there's just not too much there. You don't know where any shops are, where you can go for trade.
Oh yeah. Okay. So that takes me back to like what I started this podcast with when I said there's the guy who's playing Starfield as a new IP who's not this Bethesda tech head. They're just wondering, like to them, I can see how someone would play this and think, what the hell were these developers doing? Shitty maps, shitty load screens, shitty menus, slow start. I don't know where the hell I'm going. I don't know where to buy stuff. I don't know where to sell stuff. Character animations. I just got done. I played Last of Us 2 on the PS4 years ago, and their faces looked light years ahead of this. And that's factually true. The fake, because there's actual mocap in those things. Or even Baldur's Gate 3 that just came out, which we're going to get to soon enough here. Mocap for everyone, right? So you're seeing people play like these contemporary games, Final Fantasy 16 that just came out. It's like, why does the mocap look so crap? Why are the maps crap? Why are the menus crap? And like, obviously to someone who loves this game and knows Bethesda games and is far in Starfield or playing it like us, people in the Discord like Wesley, Corey, and Dante, a bunch of people in there, Albino, who are loving this game, they're hearing what I'm saying, but they're going, yeah, but it's actually still a really good game. And I agree with them, but it's just like, it's so obvious to me why this game is criticized, because it's really got such an uphill battle. But anyways, once again, to go back into the good
world,
I totally went more into the negative. But what I'm experiencing so far, and obviously, like I haven't played enough to say this definitively, but like it seems like the writing for the quests is top tier Bethesda, on par with their best, maybe better.
Deontay said that Vanguard quest line apparently was like worth a whole game, like in terms of the campaign or the length of it.
I'm hearing that several of these factions are like the length of a Halo campaign.
Yeah, that's insane to me. That gets me excited.
There's the Vanguard. There's the Free Ranger Galactic. There's Crimson Fleet. You can go get jobs at places, which is not straight up a faction, but you can do. And then there's even like little side quests I stumbled into that are just really short, but so unique and memorable. I don't want to, because like I want to be able to tell people that they can listen to this episode without being spoiled. So I'm not even going to say anything, but just like literally just I'm in space and I come across a ship and there's a story there. And it maybe only takes 20 minutes to get through, but I'm like, I'm never going to forget that moment, you know, kind of like Witcher 3 quest.
That's so cool to hear. That's,
yeah. So like the quest, the writing is so good. As far as Bethesda goes, the facial animation and the graphics are on a whole other level from anything they've ever done. There's parts of this game that just look insanely beautiful that I'm just like in awe of. So it's like kind of the best Bethesda's done on so many levels. The main story, I'm at the very end of it. Like I'm at the whole, like, you know, in a normal game, it'd be like, finish up your activities or the gate. Cause the game is
the point of no return.
That's where I'm at. So I'm actually just going and doing other things. I know there's a new game plus, but I'm going and doing other things. So I'm at the actual, you didn't know about that, Josh?
Are you implying it has an end?
Are you doing a thing or do you not know this?
No, I really don't.
Okay, well, I won't spoil anything, but when you beat the main story, you automatically roll over into New Game Plus. And there is a lore and story reason that happens.
Okay, interesting.
It's really cool and really interesting. I do know what it is. I'm not going to say it here, obviously. But Yeah, it's really cool, dude. Huh. Like, it's really unique what Bethesda's that, done.
Now, suddenly, the new game plus makes more sense in my mind.
Yeah.
Like the new I game never plus, did read into what they were, what that was going to mean.
Well, because Pete Hines said the game really starts once you beat the game. Well, that is true. It really is true. And there's, but I still kind of wanted to do some other stuff before I went and finished.
Sure.
But, I mean, so yeah, there's just, and that's the thing, right, is like, I'm listening to people, like reviewers, who are now in their third or fourth new game plus. And the things they're saying, dude, are tripping, are just trippy, like crazy cool. And I can't even comment on it because I haven't even beat the game once, let alone did all the content. And then you have these people that are reviewing the game that have like 40, 50 hours in. It's like, guys, you just don't know the extent of this game. But anyways, the main story, I haven't seen how it concludes fully, but this is the best main story in a Bethesda game by far.
Better That's awesome Oblivion, to hear. Wow.
Better than Skyrim, better than Fallout 3, better than Fallout 4.
You were saying something about that on the previous podcast, I think, about just how they usually aren't considered to be that well. Or pretty forgettable. Yeah. That's good to hear.
No, it's really memorable. And I don't think I like fully grasped what Bethesda was trying to do with their version of space. And it's not what I would have asked for, but I think it's what I want. I think I'm more happy with it than anything. Rather than take this like Mass Effect approach where it's like, oh, this is a space game like Star Trek. You have a crew and a ship and aliens and political alien threats and all that stuff.
Right.
Galactic wars. That's not the approach they took. The approach they took was, what if the Earth we live in and the NASA we know just continued on developing for hundreds of years and we actually started to explore space? What would that look like? That's what this game is. It's more about, what would the future of our world look like if we were spacefaring, you know, and we had like faster than light year
and
travel?
And no first contact, apparently.
And yeah, for, I mean, I guess there's like in the game, they have aliens that are like creatures, but right. not like, what do you want to call
not,
it?
Not humanoid.
Not yeah, humanoid, sentient in that way.
Yeah,
in that sense. And, yeah. But it's still kind of like, it's still kind of cool to me because it's like, it's just a different take on things, right? It's more a reflection of what humanity would do with this, like, because I know, like, you could say, like, oh, Mass Effect does that, Brian. Like, humanity took to the stars. Yeah, but then it becomes so much about all these different species and planets. And
you're right. You're right.
It continues to be about humanity and what it's like for them. So I find the story compelling, the graphics and animation better than ever, the writing is top notch, and there's something very gamey going on with that fast travel load screen stuff I criticized the whole beginning of the episode. There's something very gamey going on there that's setting off endorphins in my head, and I'm hearing other people say something similar, and I don't quite know why it is, but it's really working. Like, after we get done with this podcast, I'm going to go down and start playing. I'm going to be in orbit. I'm going to fast travel to another orbit. A ship's going to come in. Maybe they'll talk to me. Maybe I'll hail them. Maybe we'll get in a ship battle. Maybe that won't happen at all. I'll land on a planet. I'll do a quest. Something I didn't expect happens there. I'll leave the planet. I'll go back into orbit. Something crazy in space happens I didn't realize. Well, then I go and I travel over to another planet and travel and I do more quests. And it becomes this just like, it's just me like traveling the galaxy, going planet to planet, hailing people in space, finding out different people's stories, seeing how things connect, what's going on in different places of space. And it's just got this really gamey thing going for me.
Do you think it's like a Pavlovian response, sort of, where you're just so used to, that's always the orbit stuff is more the tip of the iceberg. Like, here, this is where the fun begins. I'm about to jump into this, or this might happen here. It's kind of a launching pad.
I think it is. And I think, like, when I started Starfield, everything was really slow for me. Like, I press the start button, and then I'd be like, okay, where's my inventory? Okay, there it is. Where's the map? Okay, yeah. I'd be like, oh, how do I get in space? Okay, I get in space by going to my ship and then get in the cockpit. Okay, how do I land on the planet? I got to open the map. And there was so much of that going on, but I've played 20-some hours now, so it's muscle memory, you know? So I'm not even thinking about it anymore. I'm like, oh, inventory, pull this out. Okay, oh, travel to land. Oh, spaceship, go. Okay, yeah, I got to hail. I got to take this ship out.
Yeah, you got learned.
Learned it. And once all the systems kind of come together, even though I still think it's fair to say it's kind of disjointed and like load screen menu heavy, it just all kind of starts to synergize and it's like really, really fun, you know, and I just can't get enough of it. Yeah. So TLDR on that, guys, like, you know, I talked about the review stuff. I talked about where I'm at, the positives, the negatives.
Game's awesome, dude.
The game is awesome. Like, this is definitely what Xbox needed. This is a must-have exclusive IP for the Xbox console. I'm loving, me and Josh are doing this a lot this year. We're going into the games without nearly as much hype as we used to have in the past. And it's paying off in dividends, dude. I'm like enjoying this game so much more than I thought I would. I can't wait to get back to it. I don't think I'm willing to give a final score for myself, like definitively, till I got to be at least close to 100 hours. Cause like, it just doesn't feel, it doesn't even feel fair to do it if I go to New Game Plus. It feels like I got to go to New Game Plus three or four times to feel like it's fair. But Starfield is, it's funny because I was about to say it's better than everything I imagined, but then it's actually like not true because like I imagined like full space travel and like walking around the planet. But the thing is, the fun I'm having and the excitement and joy I have to get back to it is better than I was expecting. So it's a huge win for me.
You even got up this morning like Wesley has been doing before
work. Dude, I go to work at 3:30 in the morning. So I got out of bed at 1:30 in the morning to start playing this game, which is stupid, but I was in love, man.
That's
and then like
cool, though.
That's and then cool. I came I like upstairs and like I when I happened to come upstairs, Erica was getting out of bed to use the restroom and she was like, "Were you playing Starfield?" And I was like, "Yeah," and she laughed. So it was like it was just cool. But like yeah, for me, this game's really good. It beat my expectations. I freaking love it. And here's the thing. I said that Final Fantasy 16 was unequivocally gonna be my game of the year. It still is right now, but I can't believe the thoughts entered my head. Could Starfield potentially?
Oh, competition!
Yeah, because like Zelda, Resident Evil 4, Dead Space, none of that stuff had even close to
entered the chat. 16. But Starfield is
but
showing
Starfield
up.
Was like, ooh, I'm man, is this going to happen for me? I'm okay. Like, no. So, okay. Josh, why don't you give? And I know, man, look at this. We're 50 minutes into the podcast, which is going to be like about an hour long. I could have just recorded myself almost, Josh. I'm so sorry.
No, don't apologize. Well, you thought
you were going to podcast today. You were just listening to me podcast.
You were wrong.
What's your impressions on Starfield based on your 3 or 4 hours?
We said beforehand, guys. I told Brian, I was like, you dominate that conversation, buddy, because you played more of it. And I'll have my turn with Baldur's Gate, but. Do you want, before we move on to Baldur's Gate, though, because I want to ask this because I don't want to forget, do you want to play Wesley's voice clip before we move into that?
Well, actually, I want to hear your opinion on Starfield.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm just saying after that, like before okay. we go fully
after that, Baldur. Yeah, I'll play Wesley's clip.
Okay, and then we can I just don't want to forget Gate. It. So, yeah, I'm about 3 to 4 hours in, guys. I'm on, what's the first place you get to?
Is that New Atlantis?
New Atlantis, yeah. I always want to say New Horizons. I think I'm getting that confused with something in Mass Effect.
Another game or something. Or that's Animal Crossing, isn't it?
That is, bro! That's cool. Yes, so I just joined up with Constellation. So that's all I'm going to say in terms of plot details. But that's all where I'm at. I'm in the building, and I've walked around and talked to a couple people. That's about it. Early impressions... are that this game is really fun. I am not having that experience of a lot of people's criticisms where they're saying the game is got a slow start only because I'm having fun right away. So the fact that everyone
was
is
too, to be fair,
the yeah. fact that that's like kind of a criticism and everyone's saying it gets better, but it gets like really, really good, like in terms of better. That's getting me excited because I'm already having fun. Like, did I want to be a miner or something? No, but I wasn't a miner for more than like 5 minutes. And then I went into a combat scenario and then it quickly got me onto a, you know, ship. And I'm just walking through the beginning. But I mean, all that type of stuff that transpires in that like first hour, that's awesome to me. And it was enough for me to get me interested in the grander scope. Walking around New Atlantis is really fun. That's where I kind of spent like a good hour or two just kind of tooting around. And I ran in my favorite part of the game so far that I've experienced in that short time was running into this girl and just having a conversation with her. I was just going up to every NPC I could talk to, like I could interact with, since you can interact with all of them, and seeing what they would say. It's one of my favorite things. And I'm not using Mass Effect as comparison to drag that game down when I say that I was always kind of bummed that you couldn't just talk to every NPC, even if they just have one line. I always really like when games let the NPCs do that.
Yeah.
So I'm really enjoying that. But there was one in particular I just thought was a rando NPC, and she starts having a conversation with me and talking about how she's a janitor and she just wants to move on and go see the stars and stuff. And just having a conversation that kind of started like almost like a miscellaneous quest type activity thing. And just her expression, I noticed, was like really on a different level than what previous Bethesda titles have been. And yeah, I mean, it's been 8 years since Fallout 4, so you'd hope so. But it was just really, really cool to see. There was a lot of life to her, I felt like. And I that part was like one of those things where I kind of when I finished my session at the time and I walked away, it just gestated and it just put me in a good state of the game of like, I can't wait to get back to it because I just loved how that felt. And so far, my favorite thing is just the conversations. I think the combat's really fun. Every criticism you've mentioned, Brian, is definitely valid out of what little I played. The inventory management, it's you're easily over encumbered, which seems silly. Maybe that changes later on, but early on. But
not really.
That's unfortunate. But
I mean, you can upgrade it, of course.
But the only thing I think I'm not liking is just the hub map, or lack thereof, like you already said. So the fact that it doesn't really have that definitely seems like a sore spot. And I am kind of wondering, like not in a judgmental way, but what was the mentality behind not giving this for actual generated areas, made areas, you know? Because I can understand not the procedurally generated stuff. That I can wrap my brain around completely. But in terms of the stuff that you've actually built content around, it's interesting. But
maybe they thought it would feel really weird to have, because it would stand out like a sore thumb if like, oh, I have maps for places that are curated, but like, oh, if I go here and there's no map, clearly they didn't care as much.
That's possible. That's possible. But the combat's very fun. I think I'm going to like this a lot. I like it more than, say, Fallout's gunplay. And that's not a knock on Fallout. I'm just enjoying it more. As of right now, I mean, 4 hours in, this is all just hyperbole for me. But I think in terms of their franchise IP, Starfield's going to sit very comfortably in the middle for me, in terms of Elder Scrolls still being at the toppermost of the poppermost that won't really ever be penetrated. Starfield sliding in there as the second, getting me very interested about the future of this franchise, and then Fallout being below. Someone on Reddit said something like, Starfield is just Fallout without the depression. And I thought, okay, based off what I played and heard, I could see that. And I know a lot of people are huge Fallout fans. I'm not knocking that. It's just, you know, in terms of the setting and the desolation that's there, it sounds like this is a better version.
I might be with you, Josh. It's really hard for me because I find Fallout 3 to be so, so good. I love it so much. But outside of that, like, it kind of does feel like Starfield, I might like it more than... But there's no chance. There's no
it's
chance.
Early,
Elder Scrolls is not touching.
No.
It's never going to touch Elder Scrolls.
That's a huge gap between Starfield.
Yeah, it's not even close.
But,
not even close.
The last thing I'll say about the game, though, is it's a lot of fun. I can't wait to play it again. I love that everyone... the whole time that we've seen people in the community and out of the community playing Starfield and Baldur's Gate, no one's really pitted those two against one another like I initially thought may happen. I'm glad to be wrong about that. Everyone's just kind of celebrating that we're at this point with games again, to have this much to play. And it makes me excited, even though I'm probably not going to play Starfield for a while now. I've kind of accepted that. I can't wait to play it again. And seeing the impressions that everyone's having is only making me more excited. Whereas before, too much of one thing can usually put me off. With Starfield, it's just getting me excited. I'm just happy that my friends are having such a blast with it. I will say, I think in the case with this game, I could see it being a 7. I could see it being an 8, a 9, or a 10. Well, I'd say 7, 8, or a 9. But
yeah, I don't see how anyone could give this game a 10. It's got too many problems.
I got to redact that part. But I can see it being within all those. Like, as in, I look at it from the perspective of there's a lot to push it up to 7.
Yeah.
There's a lot to push it up to 8 or 9, as opposed to, oh, what's keeping it from getting an 8 or 9 or 10, you know, in case of like IGN and GameSpot's review. I just feel that this game should have been a review in progress across the board. I think I was really surprised that they were coming out with scores for this game, because especially when the conversation is shifted to this gets really good the more you play it. I'm seeing it on Twitter myself of everyone saying like, I can't stop thinking about it. Or like, this game just keeps getting better. That's exactly what you want to hear. Not just with a game with a slow start, but also just with any game you play that you've anticipated. So, you know, I'm not saying that it invalidates Dan's 7 or GameSpot 7 or anything, or anyone who maybe gave it in between a 7 and 10. But I just feel like a game of this size, of this scale, with such a broad approach to how people are going to play it differently, should have been a review in progress.
It does make me wonder. I think any good professional reviewer doesn't admit that they're wrong, which sounds bad, but I think it's true. We talk about Ryan McCaffrey's 9.8 for Halo 4.
He stands by it.
I just think that's ridiculous. But you're like, he's never going to say, as a professional, he's never going to say, oh, I screwed up. Don't count that review of mine. The rest I've ever done, I never made a mistake, but that one I did. You know, or I think it was Greg Miller back at, when he was at IGN, I think he gave Uncharted 3 a 10. And Uncharted 3 is like one of the least favorite in the series.
Mm-hmm.
So people are like, give him crap for that. And he still says he stands by the 10 or whatever. But I do wonder how many reviewers, I'm not even singling out Dan from IGN. I wonder how many reviewers months from now or even a year from now are going to look back at their score and go, I didn't give that game the time to make that judgment. You know what I mean? Like,
it's got to be tough, though. If you're I used to think I'd want to be one of those guys, like just in the industry, just reviewing games. But I thought I'd hate that because I can't take time the way I want to. You have a allotted window of which you can try to give your best opinion of a game for people so they can use their best judgment. That's tough.
Yeah. I mean, and you can only play the game so much before you have to start reviewing the next game. So it's like a rush to get through something that you might have a great experience with. But the one thing I'll give like Dan credit for, or people that did score lower, is I think if the game was only, I mean, this is almost pointless to say because it's not this way, but like if the game only was the first 20 to 50 hours, that 7 makes a lot more sense to me. You know, if you don't have that much time to spend in the world. So like where somebody might have gave this game a 9.5 and they only played it 30, 40 hours, they were kind of assuming the quality of it over time. Yeah. Whereas Dan might be saying, this is the quality of what it is at this point. But then the problem with that becomes, sounds like both of you needed to do review in progress.
Yeah, this game did not end up being the critical darling I think everyone wanted. But at the same time, I don't think that matters because everyone I'm seeing is having fun. For every one person there might be that says, I'm not enjoying it, there's 9 other people saying, this game is incredible. I can't stop thinking about it. Like Brian and Wesley, I'm getting up early before work to play this game. Yeah. I'm looking at the time thinking, oh gosh, I only got X amount of time left to play it. So that's saying something. It's
very talented. Let me ask you, Josh, I talked to people in the Discord about this today. You weren't around for it though. You might've seen it, but you weren't around to talk about it. Do you think a lot of people were hoping that Starfield would be, not only were they hoping it would be good, they'd hoping to be a return for Xbox. I think it's both of those things. But a lot of people were hoping it would be a generational title. It is too early to say definitively if it is or not, because it just came out. But are you feeling like it is? Because I'm feeling like it's some of Bethesda's best work, and by that means a very, very, very good game. But to me, it doesn't seem like anything I haven't played before. So I'm leaning towards it's not a generational title.
I think
you can define what you think that means, a generational title, but How do you feel?
I can see it both ways. I think in terms of it landing as a generational title, it has to, like, the legacy for what it does for Xbox will be what makes it so, I think, and less the game in terms of what it's offering and more just what it does for the brand and how it can give them a lot of momentum. Like, is Starfield the real turning point for Xbox having their true comeback? You know, is that something we look back on in time, like a year from now, a couple years from now, and say, this is where they finally turned it around and everything from there was mostly on the up. But in terms
of, do you think the game itself will influence other games' developments or not really?
It's always possible. It's always possible. It's just a more wait and see thing, but I don't know yet. I mean, I haven't played enough to really say if I feel like it'll be generational in terms of like what is there contextually. But I mean, even I forgot to say this, but even the stuff that's sort of like a little, as I'm claiming at least, bait and switched a little with some of the exploration and stuff, everything that I've heard that people have said, stated as a criticism, gets me more excited about the game because I don't have to deal with as much sensory overload and getting myself like lost here, lost there. I feel like it reins me in a little bit more and for who I am as a player. So I feel that kind of stuff has gotten me more excited. But I don't mind, though, that anyone thinks it's generational. I don't mind that anyone is thinking it's a 10 right now. Everyone's in that hyperbole state of like, I can't truly get a rating on it because I'm having fun. So if I'm having fun, if I love it, it's a 10, you know,
and
as much as it drives me nuts, seeing everyone happy is more worth it in the end.
Josh, I'm going to bring this idea up. If you if you're not feeling it, I'll just leave this in the recording. I don't mind. But I'm thinking we could just wrap this up with Wesley's clip and make it a Starfield impressions episode, and then do an hour where you mostly dominate the conversation of Baldur's Gate either today or another day this week and upload them separately. Or if you'd like to just spin your whole wheels on 10 minutes.
Well, now, do you want to do next week's episode as Baldur's Gate?
Yeah, that or if you wanted to do it sooner, because I don't want to take over and like take special thing away.
Okay. Well, this is more what everyone's playing.
I feel like you need more than 5-10 minutes tacked on to the end to give all your Baldur's Gate. Plus, I would actually like to ask you questions and talk about it.
Yeah, let's save it for next week.
We can save it for next week, or if you decide you want to talk about it like tomorrow, I can get with you and do an hour on that.
I want to play the game. I love you for that, and that's really sweet, but I want to play.
Hopefully you take this as like, I genuinely want to give Baldur's Gate.
No, yeah, I don't take
it. Deserves better than
me
tacking it on.
I'm going to have more to say by that time anyway. So, you know what? I've really only had Sunday, or what? What's today? Wednesday? Yeah, I've only had Sunday to play it a little and here and there elsewhere. But I will say, it's amazing. I'm loving it. So,
yeah,
can't wait to
talk this
about
is definitely
it.
You're going to be getting over the weeks here as we continue to talk through episodes. You'll get a lot of impressions on Starfield from me, and a lot of impressions on Baldur's Gate from Josh. So we'll cover the best of both worlds.
Yeah, very, very fun time, and we'll probably be talking about these games until we get to Spider-Man 2, and that's just going to leapfrog us into the other game.
Now I'm like, and of course, my mind might change by then, but I'm like, oh, Spider-Man 2, push yourself back to December. I don't want to stop playing Starfield, you know. But are you getting Mortal Kombat 1 soon or no?
No.
Okay.
I am excited for that game, but I think at this point, I'm getting older. I can wait for it to go on sale. Part of what used to get me before is what they have now. Like, you pre-order and you get Shang Tsung. And he was the main villain of the very first game and stuff. The villain of the first movie and stuff. So there was a part of me that's like, well, I don't want to miss out on that. But usually they'd let you get that stuff via paid DLC down the line, and they put it on sale. And I want to experience
edition,
the story.
Half the price, all the characters.
Exactly. But I can wait on the story. They did reveal sort of a little side story adventure mode called Invasion Mode or something. But it's mostly just a little bit of story built around just verse matches, and I can wait for that. As cool as that seems, and I think Master Chief.
If you wait till November, you might be able to get the game for like $35-$40.
That'd be pretty cool. I think a couple people are very excited for that game, so I am excited to see how it does. It looks great. I can't wait to play it, but that one I can let slip it between
Between the cheeks. All right, I got 5% battery left on my phone, but I got Wesley's three-minute clip. So let's hear from Wesley, and then we'll do...
Just as we were messaging about getting the podcast started, so this is cool.
Yeah, and then we'll respond to him, and then we'll do the patron shout-outs really quick and get out of here. So here we go. This is our boy Wesley.
Hey, guys. It's Wes. Since I missed the banger of an episode last week,
thanks, man.
The voice recordings.
Appreciate that.
I said I was gonna try to get a 1 week later type of thing in, so we're almost there. And I got some bullet points for you guys. Try to keep it short and sweet. But Brian and I had actually been talking today already about is Starfield a generational game? And I kind of landed on the side of, well, maybe it's too early to say that.
I think he's right.
But I totally get his argument of, you know, well, if the pieces are there, it doesn't really matter how far along we are. You can kind of look at the pieces, the experience that you're getting, and judge it off of that. So I guess still for me, though, I'm willing to wait and see. You
I think
know.
You're right, Wesley. You know, definitely too early to say.
Is going to grab hold of a game like this. So at least in that respect, I think the jury is still out. But I had a couple of other interesting thoughts. One of them is that, like, I know Brian and I are, you know, we agree that Fallout 4 is a good game. And I see a lot of Fallout 4 in Starfield. You know, obviously the base building.
Yeah, I see that.
How that's carried over to ships.
Sure.
But I also think
gunplay,
like the gun mods, the weapon mods, all that stuff. That seems pretty obvious. I think Fallout 4 was a really good foundation for them, gameplay-wise. But they fixed, like, it looks like they really went after these things hard. They fixed, like, major complaints with the dialogue system. They went back to a more RPG-style dialogue system, 100%. Which is, I just think is great. It's not super deep, but it is... It's more than serviceable. It's fun. They gave you the zoom in, you know, on people's faces like Oblivion.
Yeah,
love it.
Really, that's that's like
that's half the battle.
A lot of RPGs throughout history have, you know, given you the text box and a good view of the person's face that you're talking to. So love that. I'm not very far, so gameplay for me is still pretty basic, just with guns. But that's been great for me so far. Exploration is obviously top notch. Characters great. I think the Constellation members are really interesting. I've really only talked to the ones that can be like full-fledged followers, but they're pretty cool to me. I like them.
Yep.
So, you know, it seems like your typical Bethesda experience all around. I'm having a blast with it.
That's awesome.
I don't know if it's the next Skyrim or anything like that yet. You know, and it probably won't be. You know, the more I think about it, the more I think that maybe Skyrim was just sitting at the center of a lot of perfect things going on.
Crossed a bunch of paths at the same time.
Sweet spot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, time will tell, but it's not a bad game by any means. I think it's Bethesda's third best game easily for me. So, having a great time, sitting around 20 hours, hoping to get a lot more in. So, yeah, I hope that's useful. Hope that's helpful.
It is.
Always love the opportunity to talk to you guys. Peace.
Love, Wesley. I agree with everything you said. Nothing there. I mean, I think at the beginning when he said about the whole generational title thing, like my point to him as he iterated was, you know, playing 20 hours of the game, I've seen how building works, ship combat works, traversing, gunplay, quest, persuasion, skill tree. Like I've seen all the systems at play and how they work together. So for me, and what I think people define it differently, for what I define a generational title is a game that other developers are going to look at and then iterate on and copy for years to come. We've seen that with Breath of the Wild and things like Elden Ring and Immortals Fenyx Rising and Genshin Impact. We've seen things with like Witcher 3 where like games have come out and the quest designers and the quest writers say their inspiration was taken from Witcher 3. Even right. Ragnarok said that Witcher 3 was their quest, what they looked to. So like for me, when I think of generational, I think of, are we going to see games coming out in 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years that say, oh, we saw this done in Starfield and we're trying to build a type of game that's influenced by that? Like, that's what I mean. But I think some people think of generational as, is this a game that we're going to be talking about for the entire generation and then still talking about the next generation when we get the Xbox Series Z with the 120 frame. It's the Starfield that's got the 120 frames.
We'll just call it the Series Zebra.
And the 8K. And, you know, it's like it's the new generation version of Starfield. And right. We're still talking about it. And Bethesda's saying they just crossed 50 million copies sold on Starfield. Like, that's what some people see as generational. Like, are we still talking about it for generations? And I think both are valid. And ultimately, I think Wesley's right. It's just too early to say. I mean, we can draw our conclusions, but there's no way to know. Everything you said about the game, I completely agree with. Me and Wesley are on cloud nine with this game. Josh, over to you.
Yeah, dude, thanks for sending that in, man. That was really good to hear. And hear your voice again, too, especially. That's awesome you're having that much of a blast with the game.
You want him to wish sweet, sweet nothings into your ear?
I've really loved hearing you and Diente's impressions on the game and just kind of going back and forth. Because I feel like I'm seeing you two that are just what time you can get in with it, when you can get it in. You guys are just like it's a 10 out of 10. And I'm not saying, you know, putting words in your mouth and saying that's what you guys feel, but just seeing the enthusiasm radiate off you guys. Albino as well. I mean, everybody that's playing Starfield right now is really, really cool. And again, like I said, it's really cool to see, you know, obviously I know you're excited for Boulders 2, but, you know, this is something you're excited for, and being able to have time to play this as you wait for Baldur's to come on Xbox. Just really, really cool. You have this now and it's amazing. And then you get that to look forward to. So that's really cool. I'm happy for you. Cause I feel like what's going to happen for everybody is that, you know, by the time, like, I'm playing Baldur's now, whereas everyone else is playing Starfield. It's going to swap when we get to Baldur's out on Xbox. Everyone's going to be like, this is amazing. And then I'm going to be like, Starfield's amazing. We're going to be like, right. I'm going to be like, right. In a big high five. So anyway, thanks for sending that in, buddy. I think I agree with everything you said. I mean,
dude, we got to do an episode that's just debating if 2023 is the best.
Need to do a game. Our last episode of the year should be.
I think I'm ready to lay down claim already that this is, I think this is the best.
I'm glad you're on board, because a couple months ago, and I don't mean this in a bad way, I remember a couple months ago, you're like, you know, I remember, you know, I've seen people say that, but you're like, I don't know if I can agree with that yet, but now here we are.
I mean, it's just, I guess it comes down to, once again, how you rate that type of thing, right? Because it's like, I care about Ocarina of Time from 98 and Halo 2 from 2004 more than I care about the games that come out this year. But
yeah,
for 2023, giving me Dead Space Remake, Resident Evil 4 Remake, Zelda, Final Fantasy 16, Starfield, Spider-Man 2. That's just the games that I know I'm playing. There might be other games that I retroactively love, like, you know, I don't know, Alan Wake 2. Who knows?
We'll have to do some kind of game of the year. Game of the year for us at the end of the year.
I would like to have people in our community send in like a list of like their top games and do like a poll, like kind of like,
yeah, absolutely.
That'd be so cool.
Yeah. And just dish on the ones that you and I played, get to hear from people who maybe played some other stuff. Yeah. That would be a great
time. We got quite a few people played Diablo 4 and you and me weren't interested in that.
That's true. That's a big true. One. And Colin played Immortals.
Oh, and also we got a lot of, shout out to Prey. I apologize. I am not trying to forget Jedi Survivor came out this year. I think it definitely should be mentioned with the other games. I just keep forgetting because I didn't play it, you know? I just forget. But like Jedi Survivor is the one that I know you can weigh in on and plenty of others.
Absolutely.
Weigh in on. But John,
so much good stuff.
I'm going to go really quick through these patrons, not because of my normal quickness. I got 2% battery, so it's going to feel bad if I cut off somebody.
Yeah,
here I go.
For it.
Trickster, Jacob Nyrene, Death Ghost, Installation 00, Boba's Feet, Diente Ombre, Sparkies, Hocus Locus, Blind Valkyrie, William Green, Simon Eddy, Albino, Irving TV, AJ's Dank, Evan Leah, Fallout 152, Ian Rucker DeRuck,
the fuck?
Shin Revel, Ascending from the Ashes, Born Anew, had to do it, couldn't help myself, Irish Phoenix, The Dav, Small Print TV, Aaron, Colton Pittman, Rodan, Butter My Waffles, Nerva, ACDC Outlaw, Anthony Dorsey, Chris Greco, Mega, Gavisima, Greco, Greco, Nick Terry, Mustard Chief, King Grunt, not the Queen Grunt, Aries 0430, I'm pretty sure I lost sight of the atmosphere on a planet the other day. It was just your mustache.
There it is.
Montana Menace, Green Plumber, Joshy Big Boy, Ryan Barca, Dustin Mondre, Anthony Nicolosi, Corey Hanks, Prey Anshu, MH Cosplay, Ian Big Dog Mills, Photon the Spicy Meme Lord, KN Nick, who says, hey, this podcast is quality. Thank you. We got the Shipleys, the OG podcaster, Halo podcaster, Dust Storm, and finally, Matthew Salvatore. Guys, thank you so much for continuing to support us. This is awesome. We're talking about stuff like Starfield and Baldur's Gate, and you're still supporting us. I love it.
I don't know, it means a ton.
Let us know what you think of Starfield and even Baldur's Gate. We're going to have a Baldur's Gate episode within the next week. Looking forward to that myself. So, guys, we'd love to hear from you. Please, if you're listening, because I know...
You're the yin to my yang, Brian. The yang.
You're the yang to my yin.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that's what's fun. We got Starfield and Baldur's Gate here. Brian and Josh.
It's great, dude.
Love it.
It's great. I know there's probably some listeners out there who haven't joined the Discord. If you've made it this far, you like listening to the podcast, I'm telling you, whatever app you're on, if you go into the description on the app, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, you'll see that I have there above like the description for our podcast, Discord with the link.
Please
copy,
join.
Paste it, whatever you got to do.
Yeah.
Come join. Like, we're going to like you no matter what. You're going to be accepted. There is no, like, you can come in and be like, I don't really like Starfield or Baldur's Gate. I thought the game of the year was Forspoken.
Jusant.
Like, okay, why? Or Jusant. Yes. All of our links are up there, guys. You check our stuff out on
please do.
On YouTube. Should have a video up there soon on Starfield. That's a sacred icon. Josh is still on Twitter. I'm not.
I'm a sacred icon Joshy now.
At sacred icon Josh. Yeah, another change for Josh. So, you know, I know in the beginning of the podcast, you know, you hear the ad play. It says we're not on Twitter anymore.
I'm flirting with it. I'm flirting with
it. I'm not on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm not going to commit to saying I'm on there per se, but I'm flirting.
Anything that's boldly listed on Twitter as sacred icon, that's not us. So
no.
Josh is on there, Joshua Hart.
That's it, sacred icon Joshy.
If you want to leave an email or voice clip, sacrediconpodcast@gmail.com is the place to go. We love you guys. Thank you so much.
See you next time.
And sorry that I talked for 80%.
Don't apologize. I loved it.
But I'm loving Starfield. It's a pretty good video game.
That's beautiful.
Beautiful. Got my eyes back forward and my nose up tight. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Keep going. Don't stop.
I'm feeling that Starfield.
I'm here.
You know what's going to happen? I'm feeling all excited to play Starfield. And then I'm going to end the recording and I'm going to hear the door open and Erica and the baby are going to be home. And it's over before it began. Oh, Wesley's like, I know that feel.
Yeah.
I know that feel. But all right, guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Sacred Icon Podcast. And as always, keep it sacred.